This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 23rd of September, 2022. Hello. And welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking newspaper. I am your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I am accompanied in the studio by readers Nick Kearns.
Hello.
Deborah Cammer.
Hello.
And John Parvin.
Hello.
The first thing to say is if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, do make sure it is plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, the most recent first on the list. Now, let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. City as one in paying homage. Winchester. We did her proud. Bat's new home to pave way for Pocket Park. And group fears for future after sixfold rent hike. And the first headline story, Nick.
City as one in paying homage. Winchester Cathedral held a service of commemoration to pay tribute to the life of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. The service was attended by more than 1,600 people who came to give thanks for the life of the Queen. Civil leaders from across Hampshire, members of the armed forces, representatives from charitable organisations, public bodies, the judiciary, local businesses, educational establishments and Winchester diocesan clergy, together with many hundreds of people from all over the south of England, gathered for a service of music, prayer and reflection. It featured music from uniformed bands and the cathedral choirs, as well as readings and a rousing rendition of the national anthem. The Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, gave a touching tribute which highlighted the numerous occasions the Queen had visited the county. He paid tribute to the Queen's lifelong sense of duty and commitment, describing her as the guiding star in times of both crisis and celebration. He recalled how, when the then Princess Elizabeth visited Southampton as a 10-year-old with her parents and grandmother, to view the new liner, the Queen Mary, she most enjoyed her time in the ship's engine room. And he described how, on her wedding day in 1947, after their marriage ceremony in Westminster Abbey, she arrived with her new husband Philip at Winchester Railway Station on their way to spend their honeymoon at Broadlands in Romsey, the home of Lord Mountbatten. One local resident recalled, "Standing in Sussex Street, the setting sun casting a most glorious shade of orange-pink light, which lit up their car and the happy couple as they passed by. The Lord Lieutenant emphasised how the Queen's role as Defender of the Faith and Supreme Governor of the Church of England was both an important element of her role as monarch and a deeply personal part of her life. She respected all faiths, seeing them as a force for good in the world and a way of bringing communities together. He said, "The Queen was one of the most outstanding, if not the most outstanding, figure in history. Service, dedication, integrity and honour were watchwords that guided her life. I cannot think of anyone else in the world who has simply not put a foot wrong. As citizens we owe her a debt that we can never repay." In a sermon, the Dean of Winchester, the very Reverend Catherine Ogle, said, "As we meet to mourn the loss of our dear monarch, we do so with the deepest gratitude and recognise that her life, a shining example and inspiration to so many, was a life of profound Christian faith. The wide repertoire of music was provided by the Cathedral Choir and the Kensington Brass Ensemble under the direction of Andrew Lumsden. A memorable moment in the service was when representatives from other faiths, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism and Baha'i, along with different denominations of Christianity, laid wreaths in front of the nave altar, adorned with a photograph of the Queen. As the service ended and the huge congregation began to leave the cathedral, one of them, Joan Redmond from Southampton, described the hour as a stunning, memorable and lovely occasion. Wholly fitting to give thanks for a stunning, memorable and lovely grandmother and queen. After the service, Councillor Martin Todd, leader of Winchester City Council, said, "It was profoundly moving. People from right across Hampshire came together. The Lord Lieutenant showed just how many times she had visited and how much she had done here. It felt a very appropriate way for our city and county to show its respects."
And the next article is entitled "Winchester, We Did Her Proud." It's written by Bruce Parker, who was on TV until recently. And there's a lovely photograph of him with the Queen at the New Forest Show in 2012. And the Queen, of course, is wearing a pretty apricot-coloured floral dress and a very pretty apricot-coloured hat. "We may not be Westminster Abbey or St Paul's in London, but we know a thing or two about royalty in Winchester. We knew before either of these great places of worship. Down through the centuries of more than 1,000 years... our bishops, our deans, our clergy, our musicians and our singers have provided the nation's regal pomp and circumstance for royal births, christenings, marriages and deaths. Burials of monarchs too, and hundreds of years before the abbey. Hardly surprising then that nigh on 2,000 Hampshire people should come together inside our cathedral and outside in the outer close for Saturday's service of commemoration, giving thanks for the life of Queen Elizabeth. During the previous week, thousands more had queued to sign the books of condolence. One senior parish clergyman told me he'd come over to Winchester for some space. Providing space is what cathedrals do, particularly in these days of hurry. A chance to ponder, reflect, marvel at the magnificence and majesty of the building, and settle other matters into perspective. Solitude is available, even when others are around. But then at the different end of the people scale is a packed nave and aisles with folk from every section of society, all wanting to be sharing in a huge cathedral service joyous or sad. Last Saturday's Winchester Cathedral service was actually both, sad at the loss of a long-serving and beloved monarch, but thankful that we'd been so lucky to be able to live in her reign. Some had dressed in their best, others were come as you are, but none of that mattered. We were all in this together. Judges in wigs, youngsters in fleeces. We would sing at the very tops of our voices when the hymns gave us the chance, but listen in sad silence to the prayers and to the tributes. The Friends of the Cathedral have been honoured with royal patronage since the 1930s. The Duke of Connaught, Queen Victoria's son, was our first patron, followed by the Sovereign himself in 1941, George VI, and then the Queen after her accession. Having Her Majesty as our royal patron was not just a matter of a name at the top of a letterhead. To mark her 90th birthday, Buckingham Palace provided us with funding for the commissioning of the Queen Elizabeth's Winchester Carol, a piece written by Roddy Williams, the international singer and composer. On the eve of the premiere at a cathedral Christmas concert, the Queen sent a message to the deanery asking if there was a recording of our choir for Her Majesty to hear. Andy Lumsden, our distinguished director of music, immediately provided one. Royal approval came back in the form of a message of good luck for the concert. In our own 90th anniversary last year, the Friends had a letter of congratulations and good wishes for the year ahead from Her Majesty. Saturday's commemoration service would have wakened similar memories from many in the congregation. Most of us, I'm guessing, had popped a handkerchief into the pocket for the inevitable welling up of watery eyes. They've dried a little since that first announcement. All had gone fairly well until, that is, the organist, gosh, weren't the duo of Claudia Grinnell and Joshua Stevens simply outstanding? Pulled out all the stops, and the Kensington Brass Ensemble, brandishing their instruments, gave it all they had. The national anthem, two verses of it. God save our gracious King, send him victorious. Long may he reign, may he defend our laws. And, as if that wasn't enough, we left to Elgar's Nimrod and Jenkins' Benedictus. The tap of tears had been turned full on as we shuffled out of the long great nave in the autumn sunshine. Tears of exhilaration? Winchester Cathedral had done what we would have expected. A beautiful service, superbly planned by the presenter, Canon Andy Trenier. We had done our duty and paid our tribute. Indeed, she might have been proud of us.
Bat's new home to pave way for Pocket Park. A formal planning application for the demolition of a derelict doctor's surgery in Winchester city centre has been submitted. Civic chiefs have been waiting for the completion of reports into roosting bats in Friars Gate Medical Centre, as reported in the Chronicle. The council intends to create a new pocket park until the site is eventually redeveloped. The proposal will now be considered by the council's own planning department. It said that due to the discovery of a small bat population on the site, it is taking every precaution to minimise the disturbance of any proposed works. As part of this process, the council has undertaken a bat survey and wider ecology report of the medical centre site and other parts of the surrounding area, which are subject to the planning application. It has confirmed that bats are roosting in the area and examined possible solutions for relocating them. All species of British bats are protected under the Wildlife and Countryside Act. The bat survey has been carried out over recent months, and the results suggest there are probably two roosts in one of the buildings on site and a single roost in a second building. It is believed that the bats, no more than two or three, are common pipistrelles and likely to be males or non-breeding females. Similarly, low numbers of foraging and commuting bats have also been seen on the site, especially near or over the watercourse. New roosts will be created by establishing alternative roosting boxes in trees on council-owned land close by. Now, these reports are complete. The planning application has been validated and a 21-day public consultation period will commence. The net result of the enhancement is a biodiversity net gain of just under 18%, compared to the 10% target agreed in the government's recent Environmental Act. Councillor Martin Todd, leader of Winchester City Council, said the planning application is in. If the plans are agreed, the derelict Friarsgate building will go and be replaced by an attractive pocket park that isn't just better for wildlife, but also better for local people, providing a better route through to the city and another step along the way to revitalising the central Winchester area. If the plans are agreed, the derelict building will be replaced by an attractive pocket park that isn't just better for wildlife, it's better for local people. And that was written by Councillor Martin Todd.
Group fears for future after sixfold rent hike. A Hampshire charity has delivered a devastating blow to community cultural groups using its facilities, causing a science group to discontinue meetings altogether. Like many other organisations, Hampshire Cultural Trust has enforced price changes due to rising energy costs. On Thursday, September 1st, the charity warned community groups using the ARC that cost increases were coming. To the surprise of Winchester Café Scientifique, who use the ARC's café area once a month, hire rates have increased by six times, from £30 to £180, paid monthly. The original rate was agreed back in 2014, when the Science Café first started using the space. William Vine, organiser of the voluntary science group, said they want a sixfold increase, and that just can't happen. It's impossible. We've got the online route, which we use through lockdown, which wasn't for everybody. We were just starting to get our audience numbers back. Before lockdown, we sometimes had more than 100, but since then, we've gone from about 20 to 40 people. It's recovering, and they've just smashed us on the head with a hammer. I don't understand, frankly, how they'll continue to operate with their community events at that rate either. What essentially is going to happen is the move to the Cultural Trust is going to kill off a lot of cultural activity. Mr. Vine broke the news to the rest of the group on Monday, September the 5th, at Winchester Café Scientifique's final talk at the ARC, formerly known as the Discovery Centre. Face-to-face science meetings will now discontinue due to the new hire rates being imposed from October. The community group organiser received a disappointed response from the 50 attendees, the largest attendance for a science talk since before the pandemic. William added, "You could see the look on people's faces when I told them." Hampshire Cultural Trust took over operational responsibility for the Discovery Centre in February 2022, renaming the hub as The Ark. The organisation had been honouring the existing hire rates and bookings previously agreed under the Discovery Centre. But the charity has spent the last 6 months evaluating how the space is used and its associated costs before announcing the hire rates. Beck Jeffrey, Director of Arts and Culture at the Hampshire Cultural Trust, said, "Three factors have led us to introduce this new pricing structure. During our review, it became evident that there have historically been a number of differences in room hire prices. For example, one of the building's larger spaces has been charged at the same rate as a much smaller meeting room for 12 people. In addition, The current pricing structure does not allow for the costs that we incur to staff the Ark for room hire outside our normal opening hours, making this unsustainable. Finally, as is the same with many other organisations, we are facing a significant rise in energy costs to operate the building. Without this increase in our hire rates, we would simply no longer be able to offer out-of-hours room hire to the community. It is really important to stress that these new hire rates are very comparable to other venues in Winchester. And that concludes the headline stories. I'll go on with the deaf notices now, and Nick will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Bushnell, Barbara, passed away peacefully on the 5th of September 2022, aged 89 years. Hayes, David, passed away on the 31st of August 22, aged 68, after a short battle with cancer. Jones, John Wynne, at Winchester Hospice on the 14th of September 2022, aged 91 years. Kimber, Eric Charles, 17th of June 1929 to the 27th of August 2022. Eric passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice with his family at his side. Lawford, Hereward, known to his family, friends and colleagues as Harry, died peacefully on Thursday the 8th of September 2022 at the Countess of Brecknock Hospice. Martin, Peter Malcolm Lawrence, passed away peacefully on the 5th of September 2022, aged 87. North, Brian, peacefully at Flowerdown Nursing Home on the 7th of September 2022, aged 89. Parsons, Joanne, passed away on the 25th of August 2022, aged 49 years. Paul, Margaret Ann, passed away peacefully at home on Wednesday the 31st of August 2022, aged 90 years. Randall, Bill, Alfred George, of Bracefield and Winchester, died peacefully on the 4th of September 2022, aged 89 years. Sawyer, James, Jim, on the 9th of September 2022, aged 75. Townley, Geoffrey Ralph Thomas, died at home on Wednesday the 7th of September 2022, aged 78 years. Venn, Audrey, MBE, of New Milton, formerly of Winchester, passed away peacefully on the 13th of September 2022. Whitworth, John, OBE, died on the 10th of September 2022. Young, Patricia Mary, of Grange Road, Alsford, on the 2nd of September 2022. Christian comment has been written by Rosemary A. Baker this week. She writes about our monarchs and their deep faith. Thank you, Nick.
The Queen is dead. Her funeral and related services are over. We, along with millions of others, watched on television. Millions went to watch the proceedings, and yet more laid flowers and queued to pay their respects as her coffin lay in state. How could anyone think we were not supporters of the monarchy? My first awareness of the Queen and royal family was when I was 5 years old. It was the Queen's state visit to Gibraltar in 1956, and our school was closed. I was forced to wear a party dress made by my mother for the occasion and wave a Union Jack as she drove past our garden, which I did not mind. That was the closest I came to the Queen. But I met the Duke of Edinburgh twice. The first time was getting a Gold Duke of Edinburgh's award, and the second was at the opening of a new postgraduate centre at Stoke Mandeville Hospital. I met Prince Charles at Westminster Abbey at a special service to celebrate the 60th anniversary of the National Health Service. Until the Duke of Edinburgh died, and I read about his funeral service and how he had helped put it together, I had never been struck by the fact that he was a religious man with a deep personal faith. He had engaged with complex religious debates and read widely on religion and theology. I had assumed that he went to church to support the Queen, and because at the various special services it was expected of him. It was interesting to learn that he would engage the various preachers on the way out about their sermons, something that would have terrified me. The same thing has happened reading about the Queen and her input and choices about her own funeral service. I knew more about her strong Christian faith, of course, because she had often referred to it, particularly in her Christmas broadcasts. Is it my imagination, or has this been more recently with perhaps an increased emphasis? I was intrigued to read recently that when asked to pick her favourite 10 hymns, the first one was a hymn that was apparently sung to her by her father. This made me wonder about the faith of her parents and what influence that might have had on her. I realised I knew very little about their faith and was surprised to learn that they both had had deep personal faiths, some of which had undoubtedly influenced her. George VI had also referred to his faith during Christmas and other broadcasts made during the war. Charles III has also a deep Christian faith, but will no doubt be helped by our prayers as we all face the future together. And by Rosemary A. Baker.
We have 10 shortish letters to the editor this week. Deborah, can you start us off with Queen Meeting, please?
Yes, this is from Phil Yates, and it's about his meeting with the Queen. Hearing the recent passing of the Queen reminded me of my meeting with her some years ago at Coventry. The government declared that all who served on the home front should be officially recognised. This consisted of, among others, the Home Guard, AFS, the Land Army and the Timber Girls, and the Bevin Boys, of whom I was one. With our Vice President, I met the Queen in the grounds of the cathedral ruins. She asked me, "What did you do down the pit?" I replied, "Working on the coal face with the ponies, Your Majesty." She replied, "How interesting, but dangerous, I suspect." I agreed, and then she walked on. An hour later, the Duke of Edinburgh arrived and said to me, "What did you do in civilian life?" I answered, "I was a solicitor's clerk, sir." To which he answered, "Well, you had a change of career, didn't you?" And that was from Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Never again. I would not have thought a 7-year-old boy from Stanmore School, sat on the back of a lorry made up of a school class on Coronation Day, parading up and down the High Street, would witness 70 years of glorious reign of our wonderful Queen. We will never see the like again. Of course, I know I won't, as I am now 80. Rest in peace, Your Majesty, and God bless. And God save the King. And that from Michael Kiteley, Froman Road, Week, Winchester.
Guy Warren writes about royal titles. Your pull-out section of Queen Elizabeth II in this week's Hampshire Chronicle, September 15th, the Queen's visits to Winchester, shows three photographs referring to Her Majesty as Her Royal Highness, or HRH, which indeed she was as a princess. But as a monarch and our sovereign, I think you will find she was always Her Majesty. Some years ago, I was somewhat abruptly pulled up when preparing a promotional calendar of annual events when I inadvertently referred to the Queen Mother as HRH for her birthday, for she too was Her Majesty. And that letter's from Guy Warren, St Faith's Road, St Cross, Winchester.
And the next letter is from Leonie Mountney, and it's on the subject of bereavement. The sudden death of our Queen will undoubtedly bring to the surface for many the pain and sadness of their own bereavements, and the time it takes to come to terms with all this grief and sadness. For over 40 years, Winchester Bereavement Support has been helping local people to come to terms with the loss of a loved one. We offer emotional support to those who have been bereaved through listening and support, mainly in clients' own homes. We try to help people to accept their grief and to come to a place where they're able to remember their loved one with sadness rather than with pain. To eventually feel able to regain an interest in life and be rewarded by it again. If you would like to talk to one of our visitors, please contact us on 07450 649 679. If you feel you could support someone in your community who has recently been bereaved, we're running a training course soon for anyone who thinks they might like to become a bereavement visitor. And details are on our website, winchesterbereavementsupport.org.uk. Leonie Mountney, Chair, Winchester Bereavement Support.
Congratulations. I had the pleasure and privilege of meeting the Hampshire Chronicle journalism team last Thursday at their offices as part of the wonderful Heritage Open Days scheme. There on display was the front page of the first edition of the paper, published back in 1772. Happy 250th birthday to the Hampshire Chronicle. Local newspapers play a vital role in promoting a sense of community and a pivotal role in local democracy and accountability. Looking at that first edition, the opening report declared the pressing need for a weekly newspaper for the County of Hampshire. And 250 years on, we should salute and be thankful that a newspaper of such quality, range and insight is still there providing such an important service of reliable local news, information, analysis and comment. I worked in broadcast journalism all my professional career, and I know the pressures and challenges of producing quality and distinctive news under constant deadlines and tight resources. We are blessed with a superb and continuing weekly print edition, and of course a lively and authoritative digital news service hour by hour, all provided by the team. In that context, I say birthday greetings to the Hampshire Chronicle and its staff, and best wishes for the future. And that's from Mark Byford, Clifton Hill, Winchester.
Simon Lever writes on John Miller. The passing of John Miller is very sad, chronicles September 15th. I have delightfully vivid memories when he was interlocutor during Dame Judy Dench's appearance at the Guildhall. The auditorium was packed. There was much humour and laughter. Afterwards, I purchased her book, Behind the Scenes, which describes her life as an actress. John Miller was seated beside her and also signed the book. I recognised him because he had previously acted as an interlocutor for John Simpson, also memorable. I remember asking Judy Dench if I could take a photo of her. explaining I was standing in front of my favourite actress. She gave me a quizzical smile. John Miller was really excellent, his manner engaging and professional. A sad loss indeed. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
The next letter is from James Stanley, setting the record straight. Since the publication of my letter about your 250th birthday, Chronicle, September the 8th, I have been corrected by Barry Sherlock. I'm happy to acknowledge that the Hampshire Chronicle had been published for about 13 years before the Times first appeared in London in 1785. As you mentioned in your letter, the Times was in fact known for the first 3 years as the Daily Universal Register, before adopting the title The Times, which seems to have lasted. And that's from James Stanley, Beauvais, Alsford.
Choir landmark. Winchester City Festival Choir is celebrating its centenary on January the 28th, 2023, singing Haydn's The Creation and a new work by Oliver Tani, including a children's choir. We are extremely pleased to introduce our new musical director, Paul Duplessis-Smith. Paul studied in London and moved onto the London choral circuit as a professional countertenor. He is now a member of the internationally acclaimed choir at Winchester Cathedral. Among many achievements, Paul has sung as a soloist in all the major oratorios along the London Mozart Players, the Bournemouth Sinfonietta, the Band of Her Majesty's Royal Marines, Her Majesty's Sackbuts and Cornets, and the Rose Consort of Viols. We are currently enjoying preparing for the concert and will welcome new singers to our open evening on September the 28th. Now, this is the detail. Open the brackets, 7:30 p.m. at Littleton Memorial Hall. See website wcfchoir.org/closed brackets. 100 years has enabled many people to enjoy singing many glorious, exciting and uplifting pieces of music. We are looking forward to the next 100 years, welcoming many diverse people to share the joy of singing. And this from Esther Hack, Winchester City Festival Choir, Stockbridge Road, Full Flood.
The next letter is about renewables. I agree with the letter that argued that 100% renewable energy over a year is not the same as being able to rely 100% on renewable energy, Chronicle, September the 8th. This would only be achieved if we produced enough extra renewable energy that can also be stored for long enough to cover times of low renewable energy production. However, the answer is not nuclear or fossil energy, but a lot more renewable energy. And of course, saving energy by insulating our buildings, because this makes us truly independent from those resources that are traded on the world market, like oil, gas, coal, and uranium. Renewable energy can be produced much cheaper and built much quicker than nuclear, and as we all know, has a much lower carbon footprint than fossil fuels. The UK has a great advantage as it could produce enough renewable energy not only for itself but to export it too, which would be a great stimulus for our economy. Unfortunately, as long as ministers in power have a vested interest in fossil fuel and nuclear power, it seems unlikely that we will become a world leader in renewable energy. And that letter is from Max Priestman, Oliver's Battery Road, South Winchester.
I have a photograph here of the former Slug and Lettuce building in the square, which is being converted to a Thai restaurant called the Giggling Squid. And the letter comes from G.H. Moody, giving us his memories of the street. I receive, under subscription from my son, the Hampshire Chronicle each week. It was interesting to see the photograph of work taking place on the new Thai restaurant in the Chronicle on September the 8th. As newlyweds, my wife and I had our first home, a top-floor flat, in Little Minster Street. This was over the health food shop, Holland and Barrett, now where the building work is in progress. Our frontage looked down onto the square, which was then a quiet place. We often saw the actor James Robertson Justice visiting the antique bookshop, which was opposite us. The present thriving cafe culture in the square is a bonus for Winchester, and we often visit an outlet when we visit. G.H. Moody, Harrietsham, Kent.
That's all the letters now, but if you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could write an old-style letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we'll continue the readings with the editorial comment. First person, letter from Westminster and Belgarum. The editor heads up her article this week with "Uniting to Deal with the End of an Era." In the end, it was a fitting tribute to Queen Elizabeth II's remarkable reign. The funeral of the monarch in London was a tremendous occasion, splendid in its pomp, but also very moving in its understatement. No bombast, just a sustained, dignified farewell. The sound of the thump of the heavy drum, the boots on the road, the jingle of the horse tack at the procession will long stay in the memory. Likewise, the events in Winchester, especially the service of commemoration on Saturday evening. It saw the cathedral packed with people of all ages, monarchists and republicans, people of faith and atheists, all united in wanting to give thanks to a life of service, a life well lived. Towards the end of the service, most people had the strange sensation of, for the first time, singing the national anthem with its revised lyrics, "God save our gracious King, long live our noble King." It will take time to get used to, but we will, together. Now, George Hayter is the contributor of First Person this week. He writes about big churches compared. Here's John.
Which do you prefer, Winchester or Salisbury? Both mighty cathedrals are among the most admired in England, and both are in my top 10. But which of the two legendary churches, just 25 miles apart, is best? Years ago, I asked Ted Heath that question, and when the former Prime Minister was visiting Winchester, he lived in Salisbury, in a house facing its cathedral. "I don't care to make comparisons of that sort," was all the response I got from the famously grumpy elder statesman. Perhaps Mr. Heath knew Winchester was better. I'm afraid that, on first impressions, when spotted from a distance, Salisbury seems better. In fact, Salisbury doesn't just beat us in the fairway view contest, it completely outclasses us. When it comes to distant view, Salisbury is the best looking, most famous, and just plain most loved cathedral in Britain. Its soaring, hypodermic, slender spire, the highest in England, is breathtaking, as it points heavenwards from the sleepy Avon Valley. Millions of biscuit tins and jigsaws bear a picture of it. Did Constable paint Winchester Cathedral? No, I don't think so. But Constable painted Salisbury Cathedral 9 times. Winchester doesn't have a spire, and after its tower fell down, all it's got is a stone cube above its roof, a big grey box. In the setting contest, Salisbury also does well, presiding over a vast lawn surrounded by trees and lovely old houses. Winchester's setting is almost as memorable. It's less impressive but more cosy, whichever way you arrive. Particularly nice are the two approaches via the inner close. Apart from its spire, Salisbury was built all in one go, so it has the same plain Gothic pointed windows all over. That makes it a bit dull when you get up close. Winchester was built over centuries, so it's covered in different styles, from crude Norman round arched windows through to a 14th century west window of slender stone, making it more like a glass wall. All over our cathedral are changes of fashion recorded in stonework, where one generation's construction has been blocked up, patched up, undone, or butted into by a succeeding generation. Inside, Salisbury does come to life a bit, with the world's oldest clock still ticking and a minutely detailed model of the building while it was under construction, complete with medieval cranes, ladders and workmen. However, Salisbury's interior architecture is like its exterior, pure but dull. Use of some black Purbeck stone makes it a tad dingy too. Winchester's interior is crammed with amusing architectural changes of mind, leaving one style arguing with another. When you turn a corner into the transept, you find yourself back 300 years beneath brutal towering stone put up shortly after the Conqueror landed. Salisbury's got nothing on that. In Winchester, there's outrageous argy-bargy, where a 400-year-old stone chapel memorising billionaire bishop sticks out into the nave where the rows of seats are. Salisbury has a font like no other I've seen. Installed just a few years ago, it's like a mini infinity pool or a snooker table that holds water. It's quite serene. Our answer to their modern font is a stunning font of black stone carved 8 centuries ago. Salisbury tries to outflank by having a cloister to walk around and a cool circular committee room or chapter house, and their cafe packs a punch. On one wall is the ancient cloister wall, and its roof is glass, so you can gaze up at England's tallest spire while you eat cake. In its oft-flooded basement, Winchester responds with a world-famous statue by Gormley, who also created the Angel of the North. Here's the verdict. Winchester Cathedral is more entertaining, and it wins. But you're bound to say that, you may cry. You're writing for a Winchester paper. Honestly, you can believe this. If I thought Salisbury was better, I wouldn't dare write a word.
Thank you. Now, the Winchester MP Steve Brine has a few words for us this week. Nick, what's the letter from Westminster?
Well, it goes like this. This month, given the enormity of recent events, I thought Chronicle readers might like to read an extract of my tribute to Her Late Majesty the Queen in the House of Commons the day after her passing. Madam Deputy Speaker, I want to say a few things on behalf of my constituents in Winchester. Yesterday was one of the saddest days imaginable. We have known it was coming for a while now, but the sense of shock is palpable. This is a national moment, but it feels intensely personal. Her late Majesty spoke movingly of her late husband, the Duke of Edinburgh, as her strength and stay. But the truth is that she was ours. I was extremely honoured to meet the Queen in 2012 at Buckingham Palace as a relatively new MP. The Queen asked me which constituency I represent, and we briefly discussed how the city was, still is, searching for the remains of King Alfred our most famous son. The Queen loved that, and with that trademark smile and twinkle in her eye, said, "They've just found one of my ancestors under a car park in Leicester." Our late Queen visited Winchester many times, including in 1959 to officially open Elizabeth II Court, the home of Hampshire County Council, and for the Maundy Day service in April 1979 in our great cathedral. We had the new king in Winchester just a few months ago to unveil, this is a mark of how he will wear the crown, a statue of a famous Jewish figure in Winchester history called Licoricia. I often remind my constituents that backbench MPs do not really have that much power, but we do have quite a bit of influence. The longer we do this job, the better we get at using it for the benefit of our constituents. Our late Queen, as a constitutional monarch, did not hold any executive power. In fact, she could not even vote. But boy, did she wield great influence through her vast experience and the respect she commanded all over the world. There has been a lot of replaying overnight of the words spoken by the young Princess Elizabeth on her 21st birthday, when she said that her whole life, quoting, "whether it be long or short, shall be devoted to your service and the service of our great imperial family." However, a lesser known passage of that speech reads, "But I shall not have strength to carry out this resolution alone, unless you join in it with me, as I now invite you to do." I have always been struck by that comment as incredibly revealing and brave, because I think our then future Queen was saying, "I don't embody the divine right of kings and queens, so fabled in British history. I have to earn it and keep it. I need your support." I think she reigned in that spirit, but always knowing that she had to draw that strength from the support of her people, and that she had to constantly be seen to be believed. Maybe those two famous appearances on the balcony of Buckingham Palace at either end of that fabulous Platinum Jubilee weekend earlier this summer showed that she knew that right until the very end. As others have said today, we are so lucky to have had Queen Elizabeth II in our lives. We are changed by it. Thank you, Queen Elizabeth II. It has been a privilege. God save the King.
We have two pieces from Belgarum this week. Thank you, Deborah.
Yes, so we have. The first one is about a comedy show in Salisbury. Mark Steele's In Town was in Salisbury, but the show heard a few sly digs about its rival, Winchester. The comedian took his stand-up act to Salisbury, with the city the source of most of his gags, as heard on BBC Radio 4. The programme's running joke was that Stonehenge is not actually in Salisbury, but outside Amesbury, 8 miles up the road. But the show also mentioned Winchester a number of times, with Salisbury definitely being better, even to the point that its cathedral nave is longer than Winchester's. In fact, Winchester is second only to St Peter's in Rome. The rivalry between the respective county towns stretches back into the mists of time. In recent years, Salisbury has had its nose put out of joint by the success of Winchester's Christmas market and ice rink. The Wiltshire city even went so far as to pay for posters extolling its virtues at Waterloo Station. And the second piece is entitled Belgarum Article on Puddle Causes Waves. Belgarum has made it. After years of trying, an article has reached the hallowed ground of a Facebook page called Angry People in Local Newspapers. A social media institution spawning a book, no less, it pokes fun at how the press covers local issues. Attracting the page's attention was an in-depth article in the Belgarum column earlier this month into a deep puddle on St George's Street that refuses to disappear, mainly because the street paving was so badly laid that the drain is now higher than the surrounding street. The Facebook post attracted more than 580 likes and a torrent of sarcasm. Gareth Lloyd-Jones wrote, "As a proud Winchester resident, I can confirm that the city has reached a crisis point and that this issue occupies more time in conversation than school fees and the latest Farron Ball colour chart. I have petitioned the government to make this their number one priority." Nicola Wright posted, "This is the best ever story featured in Angry People in Local Newspapers." Alex Masterson Davis spotted the genesis of the article. "The real story here, I think, is the high quality craftsmanship that went into the laying of those bricks and mortar. To whomever created this modern engineering masterpiece, I, sir, salute you." Lots of Facebook posters, whose edgy self-righteousness is one of the enjoyable ironies of the page, were blind to the tongue-in-cheek Belgarum comment that compared Winchester to a third world, developing country.
Thank you, Deborah. Now, let's take a quick look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. On Saturday, Saturday the 24th, there's a Chesil Railway guided walking tour, which starts at 11:30 in the morning. And I think you meet for that at the Guild Hall in Winchester on the Broadway, if you fancy doing that. Also on Saturday, there's a Michaelmas Fair. That starts at 10:30 a.m. and that's at St Cross Hospital down at St Cross in Winchester. Sounds like fun. Get Christmas. Oh, goodness, I can't say that word yet. On Sunday, we have the Winchester Jazz Festival, Zara McFarlane live at 7:30 p.m. She's on at the Theatre Royal in Winchester. On Tuesday, there's another performance at the Theatre Royal Winchester, and this sounds rather fun. It's the Steptoe and Son radio show. That's at 7:30 p.m. and I believe tickets are still available for that. Sounds that could be amusing. There's, on a completely different note, on Thursday, there is a talk on plastics in the ocean. Are we in crisis? That's at the Royal British Legion Sheen House in Love Lane, Romsey, and that starts at 7:30. And it's a chance to ask an expert about the subject. Then on, what day is that one? On Friday, next Friday, the 30th, we've got Catherine Roberts and Sean Lakeman of the Lakeman family at 8 o'clock. They're an award-winning folk duo at St Mary's Church, Twyford, in Church Lane there. And tickets are available for that as well. Now, here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 24th of September, the sun will set at 7 p.m. exactly. And on Wednesday the 28th of September, the sun will rise at 7 a.m. exactly and will set at 6:51 p.m. And now on to items of general news. John, would you like to kick us off, please?
Readers get the inside track on the Chronicle. The Hampshire Chronicle office hosted an open day on September the 15th, where readers came to meet the editor and reporters. Cakes and biscuits were on offer, as well as archives of editions from the 250 years of the Chronicle. The event was part of the 250-year anniversary celebrations, with a planned party that evening cancelled following the death of the Queen. Members of the public got to look round the office and quiz reporters on how the paper is put together. Mary Tutton, aged 86, came to the office and said she used to live in the building at 5 Upper Brook Street when she was a child. She said it was lots of fun living here. We saw a lot of people from the windows. It was quite different in those days, but they are very happy memories. Also in attendance was John Richards from Winchester Talking Newspaper. Mr. Richards said that the charity started around 30 years ago and sends out recordings of volunteers reading the stories in the Hampshire Chronicle to between 80 and 100 people each week. He said there are around 300 talking newspapers in the UK. We provide the memory stick and speaker free of charge, so we rely on donations. They are currently based at Unit 12, Winnell Valley Road, having previously been based at Chesil House. Simon Lever of Juniper Close Badger Farm is a regular contributor to the letter pages of the Chronicle. He said, I like to write about issues I believe in. I always find it a challenge to keep the letters as short as possible. I love the interaction with the team. The Chronicle feels homely. It feels local. Oliver Gray still contributes to the Chronicle with reports on various local music events. He bought a binder of cuttings from over the years and shared his favourites with the reporters. Editor Kimberly Barber said, it was so lovely to see so many people at our open day. It was a pleasure to meet so many readers and supporters of the Hampshire Chronicle. Thank you to everyone who came. Obviously, it was a shame that our planned party could not go ahead as planned, but it felt only right to postpone to honour the Queen. I look forward to the next date next month. More details will follow shortly.
Local abused over dog mess request. An angry note has left residents feeling threatened in their homes. The unpleasant missive has prompted them to plead with dog owners to consider where they are walking and to clean up after their pets. The residents, who live near Winchester Cathedral, say they are facing a growing amount of irresponsible dog owners who don't clean up and allow them to urinate where they please. One resident, in an effort to reduce the problem, left a polite notice on a chalkboard in plant pots on her doorstep, urging dog owners not to let their dogs urinate there. A couple of months later, they were shocked to find a dog poo bag with an upsetting note pinned to it in place of their chalkboard notice, which had been stolen. Thankfully, the dog poo bag did not contain any nasty surprises, just another clean bag inside it, but the note read, "This is what anal people like you deserve." The woman, who has lived in the same property for the last 16 years and wished to remain anonymous, said, "I feel certain that dog owners don't allow their pets to soil immediately outside their own front door, and living in one of the historic cathedral streets, we, along with our neighbours, feel that we shouldn't have to clear up dog mess on a regular basis or be abused anonymously." Most people respected the note and it stopped, but now I look at every dog owner going past and think, is it you? I feel sorry for the responsible dog owners, as it's only a couple of irresponsible people who are ruining it. People now feel threatened in their own homes. It's very upsetting that someone who obviously is a dog lover was so abusive in a note. If they really felt I was being unfair or rude, why couldn't they knock on my door? Despite what happened, she has once again propped up a new chalkboard. The board says, we would like to thank all the considerate dog owners. She said, as a dog owner, I take my responsibility seriously, as do most dog owners. Sadly, there will always be one or two people who don't think the rules apply to them or don't care. And that piece is accompanied by a couple of photos of the note left on the plant pot just outside the cathedral.
Scarecrow Festival is back in business. A two-week Scarecrow Festival, delayed to pay respects to the Queen, will be back in business with imaginative and zany scarecrow creations dotted around a Hampshire village. Droxford Scarecrow Festival was set to start on September the 10th for 14 days, returning for the first time since 2019. However, due to the death of the Queen, the launch event was delayed, with most scarecrows expected to be up around the village by the weekend beginning September the 17th. In light of the delay, the scarecrows are likely to stay up for another week, coming down on October the 1st rather than September the 24th. This year, Droxford is hoping to match its previous total. In 2019, 90 scarecrows were around the village. Assistant organiser Nigel Spellman said, as Droxford is a small village, this is quite an achievement. Already there are some really good ones and more appearing every day. There are scarecrows to appeal to all ages and plenty of fun photo opportunities for visitors. Droxford is a very friendly village and the festival really puts a smile on people's faces. The festival was created by resident Debbie Foster to bring the community together. The biennial festival concludes with a party for the whole village where the winners of each category, children, young adults, open class and special awards, are announced. The community event received a small grant from Winchester City Council, funding scarecrow kits that are free to all participating villagers. The kits, put together by organiser Debbie, provide basic materials like straw and timber to construct a framework. The third instalment of the festival is welcoming guests from the University of Droxford, the Scarecrow University. Guests include three celebrated scarecrows: the brilliant scientist who invented the Droxford vaccine, the captain of the Droxford boat race team, and a blue stocking academic. Visitors are free to walk around the village and spot the scarecrows, with maps available from the local cafe, village shop and both pubs. There's no charge, but the map includes a link to a voluntary donations webpage raising money for local causes. The Meon Valley village is approximately 5 miles east of Bishop's Waltham and 6 miles north of Wickham, within the South Downs National Park.
Thoughtful Nursery. A children's nursery has been proudly sharing its Ofsted success. Topps Day Nursery, on site at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, recently underwent its Ofsted inspection and was rated good across the board. Nursery manager Kayleigh said, "I couldn't be happier with the outcome of the Ofsted inspection. My team has worked so hard to get where we are, and I am so proud that we could show off how far we've come. With our planning recently changing, it was important to show how we have embedded this throughout the whole nursery, and the team did it perfectly. I'm a very proud manager, receiving this grade in my first inspection, and I hope to keep improving and building on what we have here." According to the Ofsted report, children confidently move between the interesting activities and different environments. They enjoy interacting and speaking to different adults present. Staff use lively voices, which encourages babies to explore. Toddlers are captivated by the stories read to them by staff. Children's behaviour is good. Children work cooperatively and share resources without disagreement. Children confidently express their opinions. At mealtimes, preschoolers speak enthusiastically about their food and say what they like to eat. The educational inspector added, "Staff value and respect children, speaking to them with consideration and kindness. Staff encouraged children to talk about their experiences, such as outings they've been on.
This piece is entitled Bats in Hampshire, Myths and Misunderstanding, and it's by Kate Garnham, who's a representative of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust. Over the summer, our ecologists have been busy carrying out bat call surveys to determine the presence of these fascinating animals. Bats are the world's only flying mammals, and the UK is home to 18 species, of which 17 are known to breed here. Contrary to common belief, these nocturnal predators of insects are not blind, but at night their ears are more important than their eyes. They use echolocation, a system of locating things by sound, to find their way and catch their food in the dark. To carry out surveys, ecologists use specialised detectors that can pick up the mammal's high-pitched calls. Here's a look at five of the most common bats in Hampshire, plus two rarer species that exist in the south. The common pipistrelle. Pipistrelles are Britain's smallest, most common bats. Despite only weighing around 5 grams, same as a 20p piece, they can eat up to 3,000 tiny insects in just one night. Soprano pipistrelle. Similar to the common pips, but as its name suggests, distinguished by its higher frequency echolocation call. The noctule. This fast and high-flying bat is the biggest in the UK, yet could still fit inside the palm of your hand. Noctules fly at speeds of up to 50 kilometres per hour and are often among the first species to appear in the evening. The brown long-eared, with ears almost as long as its body, this bat boasts exceptionally sensitive hearing that allows it to detect an insect's movement. The Daubentons. Known as the water bat, Daubenton's bats resemble mini hovercrafts as they fly very close, often within a few centimetres to the water surface. They have been observed scooping insects from the water's surface with their large feet or tail. If you fancy a challenge, try looking out for the following two bat species, which are very rare in the UK. Firstly, Bechstein's, one of our rarest bats. Bechstein's bats are found almost exclusively in woodland habitat in pockets of southern England, including the New Forest, and South East Wales. The UK is considered the northernmost edge of its distribution range. And the Barbastelle. This very rare bat with a pug-like face is currently thought to exist mainly in southern and central England and Wales. Mottisfont Bats near Winchester is a conservation designated area for this species. Anyone interested in getting involved in hands-on bat conversation can find out more at www.hampshirebatgroup.org.uk.
Science spectacular set to hit the right notes. A finale celebrating 20 years of science wow in Winchester is inviting families to take part in a science music reality show. Throughout 2022, Winchester Science Centre has been bringing back some of its best show themes and demonstrations from the past 20 years, all with a retro 2002 twist. The Science and Technology Centre, located in Maughan Hill, just outside Winchester, opened in 2002 under the original name of InTech. Over the years, the educational attraction has changed its name, opened the UK's largest standalone planetarium, that has since become the most accessible UK planetarium, and launched a number of partnerships and programmes to help get kids engaged with STEM, science, technology, engineering and maths. The 20 years of Science Wow celebrations are set to conclude with a final show running until Sunday, November the 13th. Visitors will be able to watch a science music reality show and explore the relationship between sound and science, as well as planetarium shows and interactive activities. For the last time this year, Science Centre goers will be able to look back to 2002, a time when the music scene was dominated by singing talent show winners from the likes of Pop Idol. Winchester Science Centre is focusing on sound for its continuing celebrations of Science Wow, looking at whether there's any science involved in music during the Science Stars show. A variety of instruments will be brought to life through science experiments, including a light-bending laser harp, but it will be down to the audience to choose which scientific sound machine is their reality show winner. Science Stars will take place throughout weekends and holidays, including October half-term. Other autumn activities include live or subtitled shows in the planetarium. The subtitled film show will feature Harry Potter star Rupert Grint, or Ron Weasley, as narrator to the space exploration in We Are Aliens. Families can also meet some of the residents of the Science Centre's South Downs National Park location, including mealworms, beetles and ants, in nature-based exploration zone, biospace. Meanwhile, the exhibition floor will continue to be home to live and explosive demos as part of Science Live. The rest of the centre will be open as normal with two floors of interactive STEM exhibits, such as space gloves, a giant ear and a 10-metre-long guitar. For more information and for tickets, go to winchestersciencecentre.org.
Local sculptor has his work revealed at Lourdes. A former Royal Green Jacket soldier was chosen to honour a historic England captain with her portrait, The Home of Cricket. Robert Hunt from Hyde won a competition to produce a portrait for the famous cricketer, Baroness Rachel Hayhoe Flint. The piece was unveiled at Lord's Cricket Ground in London in August by Rachel's son, Ben Flint. Baroness Hayhoe Flint, OBE, is best known for captaining England's female cricket team from 1966 to 1978 and being unbeaten in six test series. A pioneer for women in cricket, died in January 2017 and was later commemorated in the BBC Sports Personality of the Year Awards. The gate to Lord's Cricket Ground, previously titled East Gate, has been renamed the Hayhoe Flint Gate, with the bronze relief portrait by Robert Hunt taking pride of place. The local sculptor belongs to the Society of Portrait Sculptors, who were approached by Marylebone Cricket Club, based at Lourdes, to find a suitable artist for their relief portrait of the sporting icon. As an experienced sculptor of more than 30 years, Mr. Hunt stepped forward and came out on top of the shortlisted final five competitors. The former military man said, "It was overwhelming to win the competition, and I knew I was up against some very tough competition." The finished piece was revealed before the England versus South Africa men's test match in front of a crowd of past and present cricketers, as well as MCC President Claire Connor and Chief Executive Guy Lavender. Following the sculpture's reveal, Robert, 76, said, "I felt pride, of course, but also a feeling of unreality. You cannot quite believe you have done it. The unveiling of every new commission is an unnerving occasion. You have often spent many weeks and months isolated in your studio, hoping to do justice to the piece. And it is only in those seconds after the unveiling that you are able to judge whether you have made a success of it or not." Both Robert and his wife Belinda, an artist herself, now work in their studios along the South Down Way in Loma Farm on the Preshore Estate. The couple have lived in Hyde for 35 years, following Mr. Hunt's army career with the Royal Green Jackets, finishing at the Peninsula Barracks in Winchester.
High rank for relaxing. A study analysing levels of happiness, life satisfaction and anxiety has placed Winchester as the 8th most relaxed city in the UK, with Chichester taking the top spot. A study conducted by biomedical company Cannabatech used Office for National Statistics well-being data to analyse levels of happiness, life satisfaction and anxiety in every city in the UK to establish which city is the most and least relaxed. Winchester ranked 8th with a relaxed index score of 38. When broken down, Winchester rated well in terms of life satisfaction, with the city having the second highest score, as well as ranking 4th for happiness and feelings of worthwhile. Meanwhile, Chichester topped the leaderboard with a relaxed index score of 8, with the highest ranking of life satisfaction and happiness, as well as second highest ranking for feeling worthwhile. Chichester also ranked as the 4th least anxious city in the UK, contributing to its status as the most relaxed city in the UK. Placed behind Winchester in the top 10 were Cambridge and Derby as 9th and 10th respectively. Commenting on the study, a spokesperson from Cannabatech said, "These findings offer a fascinating insight into which cities in the UK have higher levels of well-being and relaxation, and serves as a useful guide to anyone seeking a more relaxed lifestyle."
Deborah. Clinics focus on eye health. A new clinic in Winchester is promoting the importance of good eye health and regular eye tests in support of National Eye Health Week. HealthShare Clinics Winchester branch, opened by hockey legend Alex Danson in June, has been sharing advice on how to keep our eyes healthy. This week is National Eye Health Week, and according to Vision Matters, 2 million people in the UK are currently living with a sight loss that is severe enough to impact on their daily lives. Laser vision consultant and ophthalmic surgeon at HealthShare Winchester, Rakesh Jayashwal, said, "We often find that eye health can be overlooked, or that people aren't aware of the steps they can take to prevent some of the issues that develop with age, or due to environmental factors, such as overexposure to screens. Experts from the local HealthShare clinic have shared top tips on how to keep good eye health. Keep on track with healthy lifestyle, consuming foods such as cheese, milk, mackerel, spinach and kale will promote good vision. Take regular eye checks, especially if your sight has worsened. If you are over 40 years old, you should visit a specialist for a checkup every 2 years. Breaks should be taken every 20 minutes when looking at laptops, computers, television or mobile phone screens."
Rise in complaints over council unfairness. Hampshire County Council was the subject of almost 150 complaints and inquiries to an ombudsman about its actions last year, new figures show. The local government and social care ombudsman is responsible for investigating wrongdoing in local public services. It finds that the council has acted in an unfair... If it finds that the council has acted in an unfair or unjust way, the Ombudsman will offer recommendations on how to make things right. According to figures from the body, there were 144 complaints or inquiries made about the council in the year to March, up from 115 the year before. After investigation, the Ombudsman found the council to have acted unjustly on 35 occasions last year. The most common reason for coming to the Ombudsman in Hampshire was for issues related to education and children's services, with 81 complaints or inquiries. Michael King, the local government and social care ombudsman, said, "The vast majority of councils agree to the recommendations we make and see them as a common sense way of providing better services for people in their area. Across England, councils were found to have acted unjustly on 2,678 occasions, a 27% increase year on year. Meanwhile, Health Watch England, a health and social care champion, said they were particularly concerned about the national rise in complaints about adult social care, suggesting that financial pressures may be to blame."
Cathedral tours to fund Winchester church repairs. A tour guide will be taking groups of people behind the scenes at Winchester Cathedral to help fund church repairs. In response to St Bartholomew's Giving for Living appeal, a clergy member and guide is hosting tours of the inner cathedral close. A tour on Monday, September the 26th, will be priced at £10 to help fund repairs and improvements at St Bartholomew's Church, part of the Three Saints benefice. The church launched its Giving for Living appeal to secure the venue's future as a centre of history, community and worship. Tour leader Ross Nell is one of the official tour guides. He said, "I can say with confidence that it is a really interesting tour. It focuses on some of the close inhabitants from Norman monastic times right up to the 20th century. St Bartholomew's Hyde is in great need of funding. It is an historic church dating back to Norman times and built on part of the site of the original monastery. So far, I have only got a handful of people for each of the tour dates, but I would be more than pleased to swell the ranks. I am inviting donations, which will then be passed on to the St Bart's Appeal. The tour starts at 2:30 p.m, will last approximately 75 minutes, and will be followed by tea in the refectory cafe. Attendees should meet outside the west front of the cathedral. Anyone interested is advised in emailing Ross at rossnell83@gmail.com. That's rossnell83, spelt rossnell83@gmail.com, to register their interest.
Nursery marks 8th anniversary. A yurt-based nursery celebrated 8 years since opening its outdoor learning environment. Farley Nursery Schools opened its yurt nursery in Sparsholt on September the 8th, 2014. The Sparsholt base includes 3 yurt classrooms in the 2-acre site surrounded by the fields of Sparsholt College. Children from the Nurch Nature Nursery are regular visitors to the zoo and the dairy farm at Sparsholt College. To mark the occasion, Farley Nursery Schools posted on Facebook a selection of throwback photos from the past 8 years. Nursery owner Megan Courtney said, "We celebrated by looking back at old photos and seeing how the nursery has changed. The children loved looking at the pictures and comparing how the nursery looks now. It's lovely to see how much the nursery has grown and how it's still outstanding setting, providing amazing care to the children and their families who attend. The ash framework of the yurts is locally sourced, whilst the canvas frames are covered with sheep's wool to provide more warmth in winter. Children at the nursery progress between 5 groups based on development rather than age."
Villagers saddle up to honour the Queen. Horse riders and owners gathered in their best dress to ride out and pay their respects to Queen Elizabeth II on the day of her funeral. A large group assembled at Wickham Community Centre at 9:45 a.m. and made their way to the square, where they held a minute's silence in tribute before parading around the village centre. Crowds lined the streets to see the spectacle after the motion took off on Facebook. Ness Taylor, who organised the event, said a simple idea she posted onto a resident's Facebook group had such an overwhelming response that she felt compelled to hold the event in memory of the Queen and to celebrate the Queen's love of horses. Ness from Wickham said, "I am a bit emotional. It is lovely to see so many people here. It was an off-the-cuff moment. People responded, but no one wanted to plan. So I thought I'd do it. I posted it onto the Wickham Facebook page, and so many people messaged saying they would like to be here. I'm overwhelmed by everyone's efforts."
Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. When you have finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front of the wallet, and return it as soon as possible. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editing team, and of course, many thanks to our readers, Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
Deborah Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And John Parvin.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening. Until the next time, goodbye and have a great week.